It's time for the Rink Rats. With your hosts, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats. Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. It has been a week, man. It has been a crazy week, not just in Vegas Golden Knights land, but also across the NHL. Jesse, how you doing, bud?
Doing good, man. The last podcast was before the regular season started, right?
So yes.
We have not got to talk meaningful hockey on here yet.
No, we haven't. We haven't been able to dissect a game that counts. And you know, we were able to go undefeated for three games. Undefeated Golden Knights, the final team remaining in the NHL that was undefeated, because everybody had that in their preseason prognostications. But surprisingly enough, and we're going to save the majority of the Golden Knights stuff for later, but you were wrong in your preseason prediction of who would get the first fight in Golden Knights history.
That was probably the most shocking thing of it all.
I can't believe that.
Eric Howla,
four games in.
Yeah, Derek England is seriously slacking, and I blame the team for making him shave the beard. He just doesn't have the swagger.
Yeah, like you can't take all the hair away from Sasquatch and expect him to be a furry, out of focus, crazy animal, right? Like, Derek England is not the crazy, out of focus animal. He's scoring goals and playing solid defensively. Like, what's going on? It's ridiculous.
Exactly.
I don't get it. I don't know what to do with any of it. But here's something that I do know what to do with. We're going to talk a little bit about the NHL, the first week of play, and some of the storylines that we find interesting. First and foremost, Alexander Ovechkin is going to score, what, like a million goals? He's on pace for like a million, right?
Yeah, did you see the goal he scored last night against New Jersey?
Yeah, it was wild.
Sniped it.
And
obviously that's his favorite spot on the ice.
Sure.
But, oh my gosh.
But you know what's crazy about that goal? It wasn't a one-timer. He had to corral the puck a little bit. It was on end. Like, I don't know how he's gotten better at that, but Corey Schneider, it's not like he was out of the play. He was over there with plenty of time. It just was a absolute rocket.
Yeah, the guy is, I mean, he's putting the puck in the back of the net, like, mm-hmm. at an unbelievable pace.
Right.
And he may even be better than James Neal, but I'm not ready to say that yet, because James Neal is the greatest player on the earth. But
that's true.
Alex Ovechkin looks like he's in his prime right now. I mean, maybe not in other facets of the game. Maybe he's starting to slow down a little bit. Maybe he's not quite as physical as he used to be. But
sure.
Scoring the puck, I mean, he looks as good as he's ever looked.
Yeah, I like that you said that. Maybe he's not as physical. And that, I think, is going to be something that will help him with his longevity into the back half of his career. Obviously, there are people that are saying if he plays until he's 40 and he doesn't dip too much in goal production, there's a chance he gets close to that 894 of Wayne Gretzky, that record, the all-time goal-scoring record. I still don't know that that's within his reach. I think he'd have to play until probably 42 to 45. I don't know that Ovechkin's the type of player that's going to play that long. But if he does abandon a little bit of that reckless play, the reckless desire to go out and lay a big hit or something like that, it might give him a little bit more, a couple more years maybe. Because right now, if he continues to play that way with reckless abandon, I don't know that he gets to 38.
Yeah, no, I agree. It definitely extends his career. I don't think he gets anywhere near Gretzky's record. But, I mean, there's always room in this league for goal scorers.
If he can
let the other parts of his game slip. If he mm-hmm. can just keep that wrist shot, that teams will find a spot on the roster for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't, again, when I look at Alex Ovechkin, I see a guy that can score a ton of goals. I see a guy that has done pretty much everything that he can do within his own skill set to make his team better, but it hasn't been enough in the playoffs. And in order for Ovechkin to really stake claim to one of the best ever as a goal scorer, he has to break that record. For me to think of him as one of the all-time, like top two, three greats.
Yeah, I don't... I mean, if you have to break Gretzky's record mm-hmm. to become, then no one's ever going to be good at hockey, because no one's ever going to beat any of Gretzky's records, because he, like, it's, this isn't Michael Jordan versus LeBron. This isn't Joe Montana. Gretzky is so much better and so far ahead of every other player in the history of this league that I just feel like it's like unfair to even like you go back and look at Gretzky's like year by year stats and it's like disgusting. Like
yeah, even when he's bad.
No one will ever like come close to what he did.
Right. No, I understand how unfair I'm being. But I'm using it as a way to say that Alex Ovechkin is not going to captain a team to a Stanley Cup. He's not going to win a Stanley Cup. He's going to be that guy that could score a ton of goals, but wasn't very good defensively, wasn't a complete all-around player. And at the end of the day, the one thing that he does better than anybody else is score goals. But I just feel like in order for him to be considered one of the greatest players to play the game, he would have to take the one thing that he did better than anybody else and be better than everyone else at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, man, I just pulled up Gretzky's like career, like season log, and you look at these and like so. Connor McDavid obviously led the league in points last year with 100.
That's a different era.
He led the league with 100 points.
Yeah.
Gretzky's point totals throughout his career were 110.
Yeah.
104, 137, 164, 212, 196, 205, 208, 215, 183, 149, 168, 142, 163, 121, 65, he had a down year, then 130, then 48, and then 102, and then he had a few non-100. But, like, basically, he had 212 points in one season. It's going to take Ovechkin three seasons to get like that point total.
Sure.
That's insane.
Sure. No, absolutely. And I'm not saying that Alex Ovechkin isn't a good to great player. What I'm saying is the only thing that I'm saying is simply this. Alex Ovechkin is not a complete player. If you want to put him into the top five all-time greatest players to ever play the game, you have to look at what his specialty is, and that's scoring goals. And if he's going to be in that consideration, given his defensive liability status, given the fact that he is reckless, given the fact that he, you could argue, is not the greatest leader of men, he hasn't won a Stanley Cup, he hasn't won everything, he hasn't even made it to a conference final yet, and we're talking 12 years in the league, if you want to put him in top five, maybe even top 10 consideration, the one thing that he does better than anyone else is score goals, and he needs to be the guy when it comes to that to even enter that conversation. Like Wayne Gretzky, you could say he's the greatest player ever, and you could take away all of his goals, right?
He'd have the most points of
anyone.
Exactly.
Exactly. So for me with Ovechkin, I'm not saying that he needs to break it. I'm saying he needs to break that record, the goal-scoring record for Gretzky, to be considered a top five all-time great player, all-around player.
Okay, and part of that reason being he's not a complete player, he hasn't won a cup.
Exactly.
What if he gets a cup? Does that change your... Does he now not need that? Say if the Capitals were to win the Stanley Cup this year, that's clearly not, maybe not solely, but it is definitely on the back of Alex Ovechkin. Mm-hmm. What if he wins a cup Ray Bourque style, where he is not the guy and he's more just along for the ride, but he gets one?
I think, you know, that'll depend on what he does that year in the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like, if he wins a cup in spite of himself, then I don't think it changes much. But, I mean, if Ovechkin has a hat trick in a game seven and gets the overtime winner, then... You know, that changes perception, right?
If he leads the Capitals to a Stanley Cup championship this year, now he no longer needs to break Gretzky's record?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably
it does.
Not.
And it does. Team accomplishments, unfortunately, do change people's perceptions of things. It's now, in every sport.
Now, I hope, I honestly, I'm telling you right now, I hope that he continues to stay this hot. I know it won't happen. I know that at some point in time, the penalties are going to dry up because people are tired of taking slashing penalties, or teams will learn how to slash in a different way that doesn't optically look so bad, and the penalties will stop being called, and the power play opportunities are going to dry up. And that's typically in the playoffs when you see the Capitals fall off a cliff, because when you're getting, you know, when you're converting close to 40% of your power plays and then you don't get any in the playoffs, that's two or three goals a game that you're not getting. But I would love to see Alex Ovechkin seriously contend 50 and 50. Like, yeah. I would love to see 50 and 50 this year. I don't.
Not what's he at right now? 8-0? Does he have an assist?
No, he's at 9. No,
oh, yeah, 9. Sorry,
9 goals in 4 games, and he's got 10 points. So 9 goals and 1 assist.
Yeah, that's more like that. It's not going to be. Right. He's probably going to come closer to 90-10 than 50-50.
I would love to see Alex Ovechkin lead the league in scoring without breaking like 20 assists. That would be fantastic. Like
absolutely
70-20, and like Connor McDavid can't score to save his life now. So there's all that. So Alex Ovechkin off to a blistering start. The Washington Capitals look very good. There's a lot of youth there that's come in this season that's kind of giving him new life. Everything's not going through Ovechkin like it was, and it's opening up a lot of space for him to score and pick his spots a little bit better. So we did talk just briefly right now about Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid and the glittery, glitzy, glamorous Edmonton Oilers are not doing very good right out of the gate. They were considered cup favorites, and they haven't played very well to the point where they were bag skated at their last morning skate. Why is this happening to the Edmonton Oilers?
I think it's like way too early to panic.
But overreaction is what we do, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're what, 1-2?
Yeah, that's not good. That's bad. You don't get into the playoffs based on what you do in early October. Don't you know that?
1-2. They're seriously in trouble of missing. No, the league is like upside down
so far.
I mean, we talked about the Golden Knights were the last undefeated team, but like even crazier, the team that they needed to lose so that they could be the only undefeated team was the New Jersey Devils.
I know. It's wild. And it's great too because and I know that the Golden Knights Twitter is really sad because they can't use their undefeated jokes anymore. Now, it was pointed out that they are undefeated on the road, so I'm sure that will make a comeback at some point.
Also undefeated without Chance the Gila Monster in the building.
Undefeated without Chance the Gila Monster. We will get to Chance here in a minute because that was some type of fantastic. But to be honest with you, like I'm looking at the Edmonton Oilers and I'm looking at the entire landscape of the NHL. All of a sudden, the New Jersey Devils look like they can't be beat until they face the Washington Capitals. Now the Washington Capitals can't lose. Colorado Avalanche are leading the Central Division with the mighty, mighty Chicago Blackhawks and the red-hot St. Louis Blues.
By the way, the Blackhawks are legit really, really good. I think we all overestimated the demise of the Chicago Blackhawks.
You know, it's funny because, again, we talked about the Brandon Saad trade for Artemi Panarin. We all kind of sat there and scratched our heads a little bit because dynamic players like Artemi Panarin don't come around that often. And while Brandon Saad is a very good hockey player, he's not a dynamic offensive scorer like Panarin is. Though when you have the chemistry that Saad and Taves have together, I think through the first 3 games they had a combined 18 points. That's insane.
They're unbelievable.
Yeah.
And Saad has been a huge part of it. And,
right.
And I remember when we were talking, when we were doing the Blackhawks, and I'm like, if he can make Jonathan Taves the best Jonathan Taves possible, mm-hmm. then it is
yeah.
worth the trade.
Yeah.
We just didn't think that was possible. And obviously, very small sample size.
Sure.
They still have another 70-something games to do this and into the playoffs. But to this point, the Blackhawks look like geniuses.
Yeah, they do. And again, when you've got Patrick Kane, and we talked about this in the preview, when you have Patrick Kane, the type of guy that you can just put on the ice with pretty much anybody, he's going to make them better just by osmosis, just because of how he plays the game, you don't have to worry about him as much. Does it suck losing Artemi Panarin? Absolutely. Is it okay because there's a safety net in Patrick Sharp that's back too? Yes, that's another part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Sharp's back. Another part of it too is Marian Hossa, while a very good player, we're talking about a 38-year-old guy that's played a lot of hockey, and having that kind of in the background, not worrying about Marian Hossa and if he's going to be able to perform, I think that's helped a lot too. Corey Crawford is an underratedly good goalie.
He's good. I think he was the – I don't think he's as good as Antti Raanta, but he's a good goalie.
No. He's not as good as Antti Raanta. He's not as good as Scott Darling.
Or sorry.
Yeah.
Wrong backup goalie.
Well, it's, you could
– He's not as good as either of them.
You can make the Scott, case for both,
yeah.
both those guys.
But no, he's – I mean, he's – and the problem is we'll see how long – how he can – mm-hmm. if how many games is he going to have to play now with Darling out of there. if he has to play 70 games, he might not look the same in game 68 as he does now. But for now, he looks great.
And the concern with Crawford really is injuries. I mean, I don't think the guy's played a full season.
Yeah.
I don't think he's had a situation where he hasn't missed time every single year that he's been in the league. So that'll be an interesting thing to keep an eye on. But again, Chicago Blackhawks don't want to win games 8-7 or 6-5. They want to start to tighten up the defensive end. That's going
to
be.
They want to win them 10-1.
Well, they do, yeah. But
like
they're,
they did against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but then they got into a. You know, they need to shore up the defensive
absolutely.
End. As much as fun as it is to score 10 goals, 8 goals, whatever it is, they really do need to shore up the defensive end. And I'm glad you brought Pittsburgh up because we didn't really have them on the notes to talk about. But I don't know if it's just, again, way too small of a sample size. But Matt Murray doesn't look super sharp to start the year. Antti Niemi, well, it's Antti Niemi. He's awful. I mean, when he tripped, when he tripped coming onto the ice against the Chicago Blackhawks, that should have been like Mike Sullivan should have seen that and been like, "No, okay, we're gonna start Murray. I know that I had you as a starter, but you can't even walk, let alone save a puck."
I think the fact that he has that garbage behind him is part of the reason Murray is struggling. I think it's calming to know you've got Fleury on the bench that is, for one, he's going to be able to just talk you through tough nights. Yeah. And two, if you come out and give up a few goals, they can always just go to Fleury. Mm-hmm. Whereas now with Niemi over there, it's all on you. I mean, you might only be 23 years old, but you're the franchise now.
Right, right. That's a lot of pressure there.
And we'll see. And I think part of the early season struggles of the Penguins, I would say they've played a lot of hockey the last couple of years. Yeah. We talked about it a few weeks ago, I think, and just going to back-to-back Stanley Cups like that, they haven't had a lot of time off, whereas other teams have rested during that time when they're making their deep runs. And I think maybe either they're worn out or they're just saving it for later in the season. Maybe they're trying to pump the brakes a little bit, and that's causing them to start slow.
I think that has a big part, I think, to do with it. But I also think depth is another part where they're lacking right now. You lose Nick Bonino, you lose Chris Kunitz, and those are two guys that are able to, when you're in a game and you're losing 5-1 or 5-0. Those are the types of guys that can kind of stop the bleeding by having a good shift in the offensive zone, getting a big hit, starting a fight, doing something to change the momentum. They don't have that now.
And Letang, who's back from his injury, has played terrible. I wouldn't say terrible, but he's made very little impact. I've watched quite a bit of Penguins hockey, and you almost don't even notice him, which is not something you would normally say about a guy as good as Letang.
Do you think that he's ready, or do you think he's a little bit concerned about getting re-injured?
That could be it. I don't know. I haven't studied close enough to guess, but I just know that usually when you've got a defenseman that's that elite, he's very noticeable on the ice. And I almost don't even notice that he's out there when you watch a Penguins game, which is not what you expect.
Now, speaking of elite and defensemen, Will Butcher.
Elite.
Yes, yes. And what's funny about Will Butcher is he probably would have been in the AHL if he signed with the Vegas Golden Knights.
Probably? No, he would 100% be. If Shea Theodore is in the AHL, there's no way Will Butcher's not. And that's why we said it when he chose New Jersey. That's why, because he knows he wants to play in the NHL, and he has a much better chance to do it there. They've given him the chance, and he's amazing.
Yeah.
And he fights people.
So Will Butcher, Nico Hischier, Nolan Patrick, Jesper Bratt, of those four guys, who's been most impressive to you? And I throw Nolan Patrick in there just because, again, kind of have to, number two overall pick. But the other three guys on New Jersey, Jesper Bratt scoring a ton of goals. Nico Hischier isn't putting up the points, but he's playing very well. And then Will Butcher, 6 assists in his first 3 games. I mean, what more can you say about these rookies?
They've all been really good. I'm biased. I'm a DU guy.
Yeah.
Butcher's obviously my choice. And I think it's also because he was not the high pick that these other guys were.
Right.
And he was relatively not talked about, even though he was the best player in all of college hockey last year.
Right.
I just think nobody could have expected. And six assists for a defenseman
right.
in his first, what is it, three games of his NHL career. He and that's exactly what he did to Denver. He is a great facilitator. Mm-hmm. He's a little undersized, but he's already gotten, I think, two fights. He's clearly showing people not to pick on him for his size. Great start. Couldn't have had a better start for Will Butcher.
Right. And so one of the things that I think is interesting is when you come to a place like New Jersey, who hasn't had very much success, they do have some higher end talent. It just hasn't really panned out. You look at Taylor Hall as one of the main examples of that. You have a scenario, right, where teams can make big jumps because they're young. You one of the things that I think we do in the media is we look at a team and we look at what they did last year, and they're filled with 20-somethings, and we're like, oh, they're just going to be awful. Like, I looked at Colorado, and I'm like, they're going to be awful.
I was going to say, but they're in the exact same situation as New Jersey.
But when I'm watching Colorado play, I'm seeing individual players that got significantly better, and I don't think that the mainstream people that are watching hockey, I don't think that the media is looking at that as a potential that can change around a team. I don't think that Colorado is going to sustain what they're doing. I think they'll probably make a jump, obviously, from what they were last year, but it says a lot about how good a player can get from season to season.
That and just the dysfunction left it's still there mm-hmm. somewhat in Colorado with the whole Duchesne thing,
yeah.
but it's not anywhere near as bad as it was last year. I think last year just was the perfect like recipe just for an awful record because they had given up. There was so much dysfunction there between the front office and the coaching staff and the players, and just it was just bad. I think just clearing that up and just letting these guys play hockey mm-hmm. on its own will automatically improve their performance. And then plus, like you said, they've got almost everyone on that team is like 20-something.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Low 20s. So they're all improving. And they're all individually good. They just didn't play well together. They've got talent. And same thing with New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like either of these teams are going to go to the playoffs. But
no.
Colorado's definitely going to – I mean, they might double their point total from last year.
Well, it's just – it's a matter of competing, and it's a matter of not embarrassing yourself. And I think when you look at a season like the Colorado Avalanche had last year, I don't care what you say. It's embarrassing as a player to be a part of that. So I think that there was a lot of ownership taken on guys like Landeskog and MacKinnon and Duchesne to a point because he didn't even know if he was going to be with the team. And that's something that I wanted to bring up too. And in Peter Forsberg said that he would bench Matt Duchesne and trade him, get him out of town, which I'm fine with because you've been dangling that carrot for a year and a half now. Joe Sakic, you've been dangling this carrot for this long. All Duchesne's done up until this point is play as well as he can under the circumstances that are surrounding him at the beginning of the year. What are your thoughts on Peter Forsberg saying that? Is it more an indictment of Matt Duchesne, or is it more an indictment of the inability for Joe Sakic to trade him?
I think it's on Joe Sakic. Yeah. I don't think Forsberg's taking a shot at Duchesne at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I used to love these guys playing hockey so much. Like, these were my childhood heroes. Peter Forsberg in particular. Other than, obviously, Waugh, because I'm a goalie. But
sure.
Any non-goalie in the league, Peter Forsberg's my favorite player of all time. And now, just like, shut up, guys.
Yeah. No, it's bad, right?
But it's just, and it's going to end up getting ugly if they don't trade him. So just trade him. I mean, it sucks that you have to trade a guy like that because he's clearly the best player on the team. He's mm-hmm. an unbelievable talent. They've lost out on centers before. That this team has just gone through so many prospects, and they just haven't. Stasny, mm-hmm. for example.
Yeah.
Duchesne just seems like another one in the long line of players that didn't pan out for the Avs.
Yeah,
but
it's kind of the Boston Bruin mentality, right, where they give up on young players way too early. You saw it with Sagan. You saw it with Phil Kessel. You saw it with Dougie Hamilton. And it seems like they're doing the same thing in Colorado.
You saw it with Malcolm Subban?
Oh, I'm glad you brought up Malcolm Subban because we haven't actually spoken. We haven't done a podcast since Calvin Pickard was put on. What is going on? What happened to Calvin Pickard?
Yeah, he's gone. He's in Toronto.
What is that? Like, okay, listen. Calvin Pickard, in the time that we knew him, was nothing short of a great interview. Really good guy to talk to. Gave us stuff, code the company line, all that stuff. You even asked him. You said, hey, Malcolm Subban, what's going on with that? And he's like, oh, it's a great organizational move. You can't have, you know, you can never have too much depth at the goalie position. The next day, he's put on waivers.
Yeah.
Gone. And then the next day, traded to Toronto.
Thanks for designing his mask, guys.
Okay, can we talk about that? Why? Like, what happened? Because, like, he didn't have a great preseason, but he wasn't. It's not like he was getting a ton of help either.
I thought he had a solid preseason.
When you look at the numbers,
in my opinion, this is what happened. This is a complete guess.
Mm-hmm.
But last time I speculated about Reed Duke having shoulder surgery, it was money.
Reed Duke had shoulder surgery. Yeah,
I was on the money with that.
You were.
Complete speculation. So let's try it again. This is one that we'll never figure out the real answer to. So, but I just think. So Dave Pryor is a great goaltender coach, in my opinion.
Okay.
He, in Washington, his track record is spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
He had Kolzig.
Yep.
You want to go back that far. He was obviously a great goalie, one of the best goalies in the league for basically his entire career. He leaves the Capitals, and everyone's like, oh, great. Now what are we going to do? Semyon Varlamov comes in. Outstanding.
Yep.
He's unbelievable for an extended period of time. Then they trade him to the Avalanche. The Capitals fans are like, what the hell are we doing? It's okay. Braden Holtby comes in, and he's even better.
Yeah.
Clearly, Pryor knows what he's doing. He's got either, whether it's his ability to coach them up or his ability to find goaltender talent, he knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think a guy like that that's had that type of success has supreme confidence in his abilities, and I think he sees a guy like Pickard as he's not physically all that talented. He's just solid, and he's probably not going to get much better than he is right now, which is a solid goalie, but he's never going to be a great goalie. And I think a guy that can coach players up like that sees a player like Malcolm Subban, who has all the talent in the world. He was a first-round pick for a reason. He didn't even grow up playing goalie. He was a skater, and he just transitioned to goalie and is still almost learning the position. And I think Pryor sees that and says to himself, I can fix all those things that are wrong with him.
Okay.
They couldn't in Boston, but I can.
Yeah.
And he could be wrong, because Boston tried their damnedest, and they just couldn't.
Yeah.
But I think Pryor told McPhee, I will make him a top five goalie in this league. And McPhee, could not care less about winning this year, because if you wanted to win this year, you obviously keep Pickard.
Yep.
Said to Pryor, all right, let's do it.
Yeah. See, the way that I'm looking at it is this. Subban was a name that was put out during the expansion draft. We get Colin Miller instead.
Which is a great pick.
I'm fine with that. And then we end up getting Malcolm Subban. We don't send anything Boston's way to get him. We claim him on waivers, and then we take Pickard and we flip him for a pick. I'm okay with that, and a prospect. I'm okay with it, in that we got the two guys that we probably coveted most out of the Boston Bruins organization, Colin Miller and Malcolm Subban. We got both of those guys. We didn't lose any picks. We didn't lose any prospects in you know, in all that. And at the end of the day, if what you're saying about Dave Pryor is true, which I think it is, he just likes Malcolm Subban and thinks Malcolm Subban's going to be the goalie of the future. If you do all that and you wind up not giving up more than you've gotten, I'm okay with it at the end of the day. I think it's crazy, though, that the first ever promotion that this entire organization put on was Calvin Pickard and Design Picks Mask, and it didn't even make it to a regular season game.
Yeah, and now you got Subban out there. Not only does he not have a custom mask, it's just white. It looks like the same mask I wear on Wednesday nights at the Sahara Event Center. And he's still got his Providence AHL-colored leg pads on.
Yeah.
They're Bruins colors.
Can we get that taken care of, Malcolm? You know, can we just get a little bit of flair there?
Come on. They might need to do it faster than we thought after Fleury took a knee to the head last night.
Yes, so we're going to transition now to the Golden Knights stuff, okay? Obviously, there's a lot to talk about. We got the win in Dallas, then we followed that up with the win in Arizona. Obviously, Golden Knights come back home 2-0, and they play the Arizona Coyotes once again for the home opener. It was a crazy night. Obviously, it was an emotional night. Everything was scrapped as far as what the original open was going to be. And it was just, to me, to a man, it was the most perfect game, perfect pregame ceremony that you could ask for, given the events of 1 October and what it meant to this entire city.
That was the best sporting event I've ever attended or covered. Yep. And the atmosphere in that building was unbelievable. And I was at Mayweather-Pacquiao. I was at Mayweather-McGregor. Mm-hmm. I was at Canelo-Triple G. And fight nights are known for that's that. I feel like that's like what when you think of what sporting events have the best atmosphere, it's fight night in on the Las Vegas Strip.
Yeah,
that game was better.
You know, it's funny. I remember being up in the press box, and the thing that I remember most about that night isn't the hockey. It was simply when the Arizona Coyotes came out onto the ice, and the crowd started to boo them. And they immediately skated behind the Golden Knights, who were standing behind the first responders, and the place erupted. I'm sitting here telling you about it. I'm getting goosebumps. Like I've never felt what I felt as far as an energy goes than what I felt in that game. That pregame ceremony was fantastic.
The ceremony was great. Derek England's speech could not have been better.
Yep.
I honestly think they should have stitched a C on his jersey as soon as the speech ended.
Yeah. And it's funny because before the season started, hockey purists are not super high on Derek England because he's okay, not great. But at the end of the day, you look at what he means to this team on and off the ice. If you come back tomorrow and say Derek England's the captain, I'm all for it.
We talked to him after in the locker room about the speech, and we were like, how did this come about? And did you plan it out? Did you write it out? Did you memorize it? He said, yeah, I wrote it. And the way it came about was, it wasn't his idea. Mm-hmm. He told us a bunch of guys on the team came up to him and said, hey, man, you should probably make a speech. All the players on the team came to him individually and said, you should make a speech. If that's not the captain of the team, I don't know what is.
Yeah, and it's not like we're looking at Derek England as a guy that's not going to be around forever. He's got one. It's a 1-year deal. You don't think that he's gonna go anywhere else? It's not going to happen. No, he's going to retire a Golden Knight.
Absolutely. And the thing is, before the year when we were saying, obviously Derek England is kind of the captain of the team, but you don't want a guy that's going to be healthy scratched all the time wearing a C. He has played
very well. Yeah.
And I actually don't think he's going to be healthy scratched all that often. I mean, is he going to miss a few games here and there? Of course. But I think we underestimated Derek England, and I think he's playing better than he did up in Calgary.
Yep.
And it could have a lot to do with he loves Las Vegas and he's playing for this is his team. And I think he should wear the C after that. And anyways, what I was getting to, this is a long-winded way of getting to it, but you said the moment for you was when they skated out. For me, when Derek England scored that second goal, I literally couldn't even believe what I'm watching. Is this a movie? Are you guys messing with me? There's no way this is really happening. For them to score four goals, like back-to-back-to-back, and the crowd is going crazy, they still hadn't finished celebrating the last goal when they score the next one. But when Derek England scored, the dude never scores.
No.
And just the pure joy in his celebration, I literally, like, it was like an out-of-body experience. Yeah. I couldn't even believe what I was watching. When he scored and just threw his stick and raised his hands up in the air, this wasn't a pre-planned, choreographed celebration that most guys have or the little bend on the knee, fist pump type of thing. He just didn't know what to do. I don't know what to do with my hands type of thing.
Just completely overcome
just
with emotion.
Pure euphoria. I couldn't even believe it. It was unbelievable. Best sporting moment of the year. Ken from Sinbin said it. I completely agree. Build a statue of Derek England outside T-Mobile Arena.
Yeah, I completely agree. I listen, the entire night, save for the third period, was magical, right? And there's nothing that we can say. There's no negative that we can draw on. Obviously, because of the emotion surrounding the event, I was worried about how they would come out in the first 10 minutes of the game. I asked Gerard Gallant what the message was. He's like, I just got them prepared to play the biggest game that we're ever going to play. And he said that in the post-game press conference. And I'm like, how do you do that? Like, obviously, it's easy to do when you know you're playing for the Stanley Cup. But how do you get these guys that have only been in the city for a couple of weeks to really gather together and temper that emotion and perform for the fans? And then I got to thinking, when you're performing for something bigger than yourself, bigger than your team, when you're performing for your city, I think it's a lot easier to lay it all out on the line, which is what they did in the first 10 minutes of that game.
Yeah, there was two ways that could have gone. They could have just been so nervous for the beginning of that game, because not only because of the pregame ceremonies, but just the fact that it's the first meaningful game in a new city.
Yep.
But and they could have come out jittery and Arizona could have jumped on them, but it was obviously the opposite. And I think it was just an adrenaline dump, and that's why they struggled at the end of the second period and in the third period. I think at that point the team had run out of gas. And I think the arena did too.
Yeah.
Because as great as the arena was, it was pretty dead in there for the third period. But I don't blame anyone. I mean, it was just an adrenaline. Just everything, the way it was, all the emotions that went into that first hour or so, if you count the whole pregame and then the whole first period, that whole hour, you're just wiped completely out emotionally. And I think the team kind of had the same thing. And luckily, they were up by so many that they were able to just hold on.
And I'm glad you said that. Because taken in isolation, I think you're absolutely right. I think that they just ran out of steam. They were emotionally drained, physically drained going into that third period against Arizona. But there was a game last night against the Detroit Red Wings in which the Vegas Golden Knights didn't really look super great to start, kind of took over in the second period, had a very good second period, showed that they're relentless, showed that they can score in bunches, took a lead into the third period, and completely lost their game. I mean, completely lost their game. And I get it. It's a small sample size, two games. But it's the second game in a row where they have come out into the third period and been a completely lost team.
Yeah, and Turk said the same thing. He, in the post game, he compared it. He said, yeah, another bad third period. To me, it's two completely different things.
Mm-hmm.
I think against Arizona, they were spent.
Yep.
They had an adrenaline dump and they were just done. I don't think they were physically or mentally tired last night during the third period. I think they just made mistakes. And then I think once this team hasn't faced adversity on the ice. And I think once things started going bad, they started thinking, well, we're going to come back like we always do. And they started forcing things and taking chances. And unlike the Arizona Coyotes, the Detroit Red Wings have players that when you take, I mean, the Red Wings aren't amazing, but
no.
You give Henrik Zetterberg
4 points last night,
a 2-on-1, he's going to make you look stupid. And he did continuously.
Yeah. And that play particularly, man, Braden McNabb, I feel for him because he's the only guy back, but I wish that he would have played that 2-on-1 a little bit differently. But I mean, again, when it's Henrik Zetterberg, what are you going to do?
They had like 18 2-on-1s.
Yeah, exactly.
And every one of them, they like executed them all to perfection. Like there was no, the puck never bounced over anybody's stick. It was just tic-tac-toe goal every time.
Yeah.
And there's nothing Fleury could do. There's nothing the defenseman could do at that point. I mean, earlier there was something they could do by not turning it over at the blue line.
Well, and you can argue if Colin Miller doesn't hit that post on the power play when it's 3-3, if that goes in 4-3 Golden Knights, all of a sudden the building's back into it. You don't know what happens after that.
My story after the game that's in the LasVegasSun.com today, and when this airs, it'll still be there, and there'll be new stories there, so go check that out.
Go read it. Go read it now.
But anyways, after that, my story was basically, welcome to the NHL, Golden Knights.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, symbolically, they were welcome to the NHL when someone chucked an octopus onto the ice at T-Mobile Arena. And of course, that's going to piss everyone off. I think it's hilarious. I'm like all for throwing dead animals on the ice. Like, I don't care if it's a catfish, an octopus, whatever. I think it's hilarious. I'm not like one of those people that's like, oh, that's disrespectful. How did you let him do it? Ken was losing his mind. He's like, whoever that is, find them and throw them out. And they did throw them out. They did throw them out.
But, I can't even imagine Ken's reaction to that.
But yeah, so they got their NHL baptism with an octopus flying under their ice.
Fittingly by the Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah, welcome to the NHL. And then they got their baptism of learning what happens when you give real high-end NHL talent opportunities, and they make you pay. And then Eric Haula got his baptism by getting the crap beat out of him.
You know, you say that. Okay, listen. Tatar punched his helmet. All right? Like, I get
it. No, he had a couple good uppercuts.
No, it wasn't that bad. Like, listen. As much crap as we can give Eric Haula for getting his butt kicked in the fight, I give him way more high marks for dropping the gloves on a hit that he did not like.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. And that was the first part of my story was welcome to the NHL. And then the second part was they may have lost, but they showed that they're not going to be bullied.
Right.
Another example is Nate Schmidt. Lucas Pisa gets absolutely
just
destroyed in the corner.
Yeah.
And Nate Schmidt said, no, that's not okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to hurt you now. Problem is, he hurt the guy. He went over and smashed him, but the dude just like slid the puck past him to Zetterberg, who then filleted.
Well, the problem was Lucas Pisa was going to do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Lucas Pisa gets up and he's like, oh, it was you? I'm going to kill you. And then Nate Schmidt's like, no, Luca, it's cool. I got it. Why don't you cover the man that I'm abandoning? And then it's like, no, we're just going to go hit him together. They end up hitting each other, and Henrik Zetterberg's in on a breakaway. So, I agree 100%. I liked the fire that they had. It wasn't going their way in the third period, but at least they showed me a little bit of something.
And Schmidt protecting Fleury in the second period.
Yeah,
they were getting a little physical with Fleury after the play, and it was Abdelkader.
Yeah, always.
And Schmidt, like perfect form NFL, tackled him into the end boards. So
did you see Fleury try to like grab Abdelkader off of Schmidt by pulling his fight strap and he fell back and it was dead. Oh, so good.
Yeah.
So speaking of Marc-Andre Fleury, you asked him a very interesting question after the game that I think we need to get into. For those of you that don't know, Fleury went old school on a breakaway, went kind of down with the two-pad slide, left himself exposed, took an Anthony Mantha knee to the head, was down for a little bit, stayed in the game, played the rest of the game. To my eye, didn't look very comfortable after that point in the game. You asked him a question after that is somewhat concerning.
Yeah, so, I mean, the trainer came out and looked at him, but they said he was fine. He played most. They scored six goals. I'd say five of them. Fleury had absolutely no chance.
I agree.
He was hung out to dry. Mm-hmm. But the last one in particular was a relatively safe shot from almost from the blue line. There was no screen in front of him. It was a wrist shot, top corner, glove side. It's a save that Fleury needs to make and does make. And he just completely missed it. So that was kind of the one that I was like, wow, maybe there's something here. So I go in the locker room. There's of course, like every other time, 150 people are interviewing Fleury. Yeah. So I grabbed Schmidt. I grabbed Perron. I talked to James Neal. Finally, everybody leaves Fleury. And at this point, he's like ready to leave.
Yeah.
But I grabbed him real quick and I'm like, hey, are you okay? And he was like, this is the nicest human being I've ever talked to in my life. Like, I didn't know it was possible for Marc-Andre Fleury to be angry.
Yeah.
And he was not having it.
Really?
I was like, are you okay? And he's like, what do you mean? And I'm like,
you got hit in the head.
Yeah, the
man.
Knee to the head. Are you hurt? And he goes, I don't know. We'll see tomorrow. And walked away. And he was clearly upset. Now, it's tough to tell if he's upset because they just lost 6-3.
Yep.
That could very well be it. It could have nothing to do with the injury. He could just be upset that they lost 6-3. He gave up six goals, and he just is so tired of talking to the media. Get the hell away from me.
Sure.
Or it could be that he knows he took a knee to the head and it hurt.
Yeah.
And this is a guy with a history of concussions.
Right.
We hope that's not the case. I'm going to I'm literally leaving from the studio, going straight to practice. Right. Can't wait to ask him. Can't wait for him to hate me even more. But
can't wait to see if he's even on the ice.
Yeah. So we'll see. Man, if he were to miss an extended period of time, that Pickard and Subban situation looks a little different now.
It does, but then again, understanding that the Golden Knights won the games that they needed to win this year, literally, that's it.
Yeah,
they've won the
Dallas
two,
and the tenth.
They've won the two games that they needed to win. I don't know that that's necessarily the worst thing in the world, because Malcolm Subban gets a lot of experience this way. It could also crush his confidence, so who knows? But that's the risk you took. You know, that's the risk you took when you shipped off a guy that you know is solid at this level for a guy that you don't even know if he's ready to play at this level.
Yeah. At this point, I think Fleury's okay, by the way. If I had to guess, I'd say I think he's okay, because I don't think they would have left him in the game if he wasn't.
Well, that's the other thing, too. Where the hell are the concussion spotters?
Yeah.
I mean, this is, like you said, it's a guy that's had concussion issues in the past. He got steamrolled, literally steamrolled, knee to the head. And you know what the concussion spotters are supposed to look for? They're supposed to look for, right after the play happens, a play in which the head is contacted as the principal point of contact, they are supposed to look for the player's reaction. Does the player remain down on the ice for a while? Does the player clutch and grab at his head? Both things that Marc-Andre Fleury did immediately after that game.
Mm-hmm.
So, or after that hit. So I don't understand how he was not taken out of that game. If Connor McDavid gets taken out of a game because he smacks his mouth on the ice, but Marc-Andre Fleury takes a knee to the head, is down, holds his head, and isn't taken off the ice, what the hell are the NHL concussion spotters doing?
It's weird. And if it turns out he does have a concussion, so you're going to tell me he played a half of an NHL game, a period and a half, with a concussion, as a goalie, he's having pucks flying at his head at 100 miles an hour.
Exactly.
With a concussion.
Exactly. And if he's out for a significant amount of time, the argument could be made that 22 minutes of time where he was in the game may have weeks and weeks and weeks added to the time that he's out.
Yeah.
I just don't understand it.
Yeah. Let's hope it wasn't a concussion. He just was angry that they lost and
mad at you.
Just didn't want to answer my question.
Yeah. Look at you sneaking in after the scrum.
I don't like the scrum.
I don't either. I hate it.
I just want to talk to these guys. Like, I'll literally just wait. Like, the scrum has like a kind of they all move together from. Yeah. Usually it's Fleury, then they go to Neil, then they go to whoever happened to score that night. But those are the two. But so I'll usually like just grab someone else and wait for them to leave, because, or if I can get to them before and then I'm in the front of the scrum, because then I'll just ask all their questions for them, and then my answers to my questions are on every channel of nightly news tonight.
No, that's a really good strategy. It's the first home game was tough with all the media that was in town. It was really tough just to get your microphone in there. You know what I mean? But anyway, so
the toughest one, by the way, was the preseason game, because Steve Aoki was in the freaking locker room for like an hour.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
hey,
I went in wanting to talk to Jason Garrison. Quickly realized Jason Garrison doesn't want to talk to me. He wants to hang out with Steve Aoki. So I'm going to have to talk to other people, because, and then they started like having them pose, and then they were having them jump in the air together at the same time while they were taking pictures. And I was like, yeah, I'm out of here.
Dude, my memory from that night was fantastic. Jason with Sinbin wanted Jonathan Marchessault, and Jonathan walks into the locker room, right? And Jason's like, hey, Jonathan, can I get you for a second? He's like, nah, dude, just give me a minute. I'm going to go talk to Steve Aoki. And like, no joke, 20 minutes later, Marchessault comes walking back. He's like, yeah, I got a couple minutes. And Jason's just like, okay, let's do it now. Yeah.
I would rather talk to Steve Aoki than any of us.
I guess so. I mean, I suppose he's somewhat interesting. I'm not familiar with his music. Does he actually like make music, or does he just play other people's music?
Maybe Ari can answer this one for us.
Does he play?
I think he just plays other people's music, correct?
Well, what does he do?
Because that's what DJing is now, apparently.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
No, I think he's more of, like the tastemaker. Like, he plays the cool records with the transitions and puts his fist in the air and gets like 30 grand an hour for that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So living your dream then.
Basically. Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, good stuff. I don't know that I would be super stoked to talk to him, but I mean, he's an interesting looking fellow, that's for sure.
He also was telling, I overheard him telling Garrison, you're invited to, I think it's Steve Aoki's Playhouse, whatever it is. He's got, the dude literally has a, I'm not kidding, this is 100% serious. And he's like, ridiculous. we got a ball pit, and we got he was explaining it, it's like Rob's, what was it called? What was that show he used to have?
Rob and Big?
No, yeah, but the one where he would just do crazy.
Like Fantasy Playhouse or something
Rob's. Man, why can't I think of it? Fantasy Factory?
I think
Steve Aoki has his own version of that here in Vegas, and he was like telling all the players, yeah, and we're gonna build an ice rink if you guys want to come. Like, yeah. this is how rich Steve Aoki is. He's like, yeah, I've got this building with just fun crap that I just think of, and they build it for me. If you guys want to come, I'll build an ice rink. Like,
yeah, no, hey, I remember that particular moment, and I'm like, you know that it's just more than like flooding your backyard. He's like, no, it'll be fine. I'm just gonna, you know, the whatever commercial refrigeration systems underneath City National Arena and T-Mobile Arena, I'll just fly that in. Not a big deal. I'm good. Yeah. It was ridiculous. It was so crazy.
Even if you don't like his music, I mean, I feel like if you went to hang out with Steve Aoki, you're probably gonna have a pretty damn good time.
Yeah, I think that you're right, especially if, you know, I can just tell him what I want and he'll fly it in from all four corners of the world. It'd be great. Yeah. So one of the other things, there's two more things I think that we need to touch on with the Golden Knights. One is the GOAT, and the other is the Gila Monster. We'll start with
the GOAT and the Gila Monster.
Yes, see what I did there?
I love
it. So we got to talk about the GOAT. And now we've used Marc-Andre Fleury as the GOAT. He's always going to be the GOAT. But there's another GOAT in town, and that would be, and we're not calling him an actual GOAT, greatest of all time. Okay, James Neal, who has 6 goals, who scored in all 4 Vegas Golden Knights games, 3 game-winning goals, first person to ever do that for an expansion team. I mean, what can you say about James Neal?
The dude is freaking unbelievable.
Amazing. And he's a great interview.
He's the real deal.
He is the real deal. He's not whatever Pierre Maguire called him, the big deal James Neal. That was so stupid.
I didn't hear that.
Oh, my God. So
this was this year?
Yeah. This was at the game.
I'm not watching it on TV,
right,
though. I'm always at the game.
So a little bit of a story time here, right? So we were at the game on Tuesday. I was in the press box with you guys on Tuesday. Wednesday, I took the day off because I had kind of a long day that day. There was a lot of other things that I had going on, not just that game. So for my wife, who's got a lot of family in her family's basically first responders. She works with the police department, all that stuff. So I was like, you know what? You really got to see this game. It's going to make you feel good. So I turned the game on. I turned the replay on. And I swear, Pierre Maguire's between the boards. Between the benches, and he says, oh, power play goal by James Big Deal Neal. He is the big deal. And I'm like, no one's ever said that ever in the history of ever.
Yeah. He is the real deal, though.
Yeah, no, he totally is. And you know what's funny is I went on the Golden Knights Insider show, and I complained about Pierre Maguire saying big deal James Neal and got immediately shut down because – Pierre Maguire was a guest on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider
show.
Hey, he's a friend of the show.
No, seriously though, I feel like I'm going on like tour right now. This is like the circuit. I'm going to every radio show, and obviously this is our podcast, so I got to get it on here.
Yeah.
With this thought process that I'm trying to spread, I feel like I'm going door to door. I'm like got like an election sign in front of my house.
Do you have a white T-shirt and a black tie?
I need one.
And a bicycle?
Just to consider this, Vadim Shipachyov, who we haven't gotten to.
Uh-huh.
We might not touch on him this podcast, but...
You know, I forgot about him.
Yeah. I think everybody's forgotten about him, including George McPhee. He's literally just like... George McPhee is leaving Vadim Shipachyov's text on red at this point.
Yeah, it's great.
But anyways, people see him as a building block that will be one of the stars on this team when they contend in 3 or 4 years. That's just the perception of, like, and obviously him being sent down to the HL and not playing, like, people are starting to kind of sour on him. But since we signed him for $9 million over 2 years, people have seen Vadim Shipachyov as the future, part of the future.
Yep.
James Neal, on the other hand, is seen as a grizzled veteran that – has no place on this team in 3 or 4 years that is clearly just here to get us a first-round pick.
I know where you're going with this.
I'm guilty. I'm guilty of it. Mm-hmm. I've said James Neal's going to get us a first-round pick, and I still think that is probably the case.
Yeah.
But consider James Neal is 6 months younger than Vadim Shipachyov.
What?
He's 30. I feel like, and the thing is, Shipachyov looks like he's 14. And he's never played in the NHL, and he's considered a rookie, so he looks young.
Yeah.
People have never seen him, so you just he feels like a prospect.
Can't grow a beard.
Yeah, whereas James Neal is a rough-looking dude. Yeah. He's got the long hair. He looks like an older guy that's, like, on his way down.
Mm-hmm.
But he's clearly showing right now that not only is he not on his way down, he might be playing the best hockey of his entire career. He's 30. This isn't football where, like, running backs, when they hit 30, they're done.
Right.
This is, in the NHL, I feel like your prime years are like 30 to 35. A lot of guys play really, really, really well. We just talked about Hossa. He's 38, and he hasn't completely lost it. I mean, he's still, and then, obviously, there are guys that are 47 and still playing.
Sure. Oh, Jager.
But looks no, very but, good, no, but, too. But my point is, in 4 years, when this team is ready to contend for playoffs,
mm-hmm.
James Neal's going to be 34. And if you and I were to make a bet right now,
yep.
In 4 years, they'll both be 34. Who will be a better NHL player, James Neal or Vadim Shipachyov?
James Neal.
It's not even close.
Not even.
I would bet any amount of money in the world.
Yeah.
So, why? Why is James Neal for sure gone and Shipachyov is a building block?
The only reason why is because given what James Neal's done so far this year, and if he continues to do that, obviously, over the course of the next 30 to 45 games, there will be teams lining up to give us something for him. That all being said, I would be okay with that if James Neal doesn't sign an extension to go to another team. If James Neal is really adamant, as he says he is, about staying in Vegas, I don't mind him being used as a rental, but I want him back.
That's the key. Does James Neal want to be a Golden Knight? Because he is clearly playing the best hockey of his career. He's not Marc-Andre Fleury, who mm-hmm. has had his Stanley Cups and just wants to live in a nice city and have fun and be the guy in town.
Sure.
He wants to win a Stanley Cup. If McPhee and James Neal come to negotiations and he says, yeah, I want to, because obviously he's a free agent at the end of this year.
Right.
He's going to get a massive contract.
Sure.
But that's the thing. You have to have star players. It's not like everyone's like so afraid to give massive contracts to people, but like to win games, you have to give out massive contracts because you have to have star players to win games, and that's what they get paid. Why wouldn't you rather pay somebody who the guy has had 11 seasons in the NHL?
Yeah.
10 of them he's played without being injured for majority of the season.
Mm-hmm.
In those 10, he scored more than 20 goals. 10 times.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
He's never had a season that he played the whole season and didn't score 20 goals. He's the definition of consistency, mm-hmm. and he's even better now than he was then. I feel like if you're going to give a guy a long-term deal, that's the type of guy you can feel great about when you sign that deal. We're not going to regret this in a year.
Well, think about it from this perspective, right? The timeline for the Vegas Golden Knights to compete for a Stanley Cup is 6 years. Now, we can argue about whether or not that's ridiculous in and of itself, but that's the timeline. James Neal at that point would be 36 years old. And we're not talking about 36 where I think that if you put him on the third line, he's going to diminish and go away. We're talking about a guy that could probably put up 15 to 18 goals on a third line, in a third line capacity, playing behind guys like Cody Glass, Nick Suzuki, Lecision, all those guys, right? So sign him to a six-year deal. Sign him to a five-year deal. And then at that point, you know that that's the window of time to win. If that's not what James Neal wants, then he doesn't have to sign it. But if he wants to stay here, that's what you do. Although I think you entertain the idea, I really do think you entertain the idea with James Neal's blessing of maybe sending him somewhere at the deadline in order to get a first round pick, in order to give him another shot at winning a Stanley Cup right now, under the pretense that he signs with you in the offseason.
That I don't know. I don't know. I think if James Neal wants to be a Golden Knight, you sign him long term.
Mm-hmm.
I think if James Neal doesn't want to be a Golden Knight, that's perfectly fine, and I would completely understand that. Thanks for scoring all these goals for us. We're going to get a crap ton of draft picks.
Sure.
Either way, him playing this good is unbelievable for the Golden Knights.
Yeah.
I just, like I said, I just want to throw that out there. I feel like nobody's really talking about he could be a long-term star for this team if he wants to be here, because he's not as old as it's being portrayed. I feel like he's being portrayed as a lot older of a player than he really is.
And I think the perception of the KHL and European hockey is that it doesn't beat you up so much, so that's why Shipachov is a, quote, younger 30 than a guy like James Neal, who's played very tough, rugged hockey for the past 10 years, 12 years, whatever. But, yeah, you're right. He's not an old guy, and if he continues to play like this, and he's invigorated by this move, then you give the guy what he wants, because he will put butts in seats. He will. Shipachov isn't.
And he'll put trophies in cases. Because
he will.
Because he's the real deal.
James Neal. Yep. So, the Gila Monster.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so... last night, I was not at the game. I was not covering the game last night. I was at home with my daughter and my son, and we were watching the pregame festivities. We're just going to gloss completely over Excalibur, because that was, okay, that was what, it's, I, no words. Anyway.
The word is awful.
Yeah, awful's probably what I was thinking. But all of a sudden, there's this Gila Monster. And they're talking about how cool the Gila Monster is. He's got that stupid horn.
I like the horn.
That might be the best part of the whole thing. But what I loved about it is my daughter's sitting right next to me, and she's like, "Dad, what the heck is that?" I was like, "It's a Gila Monster. Don't you know?" And she's like, "No, it's not a knight. Why isn't it a knight? Why didn't they make a big knight? They're the Knights. They're not the Vegas Gila Monsters. What is this?"
They may be the Vegas Gila Monsters soon after this trademark issue doesn't get settled. I'd rather that be the Gila Monsters than the Sand Knights.
Sand Knights is the worst name
I've ever heard. Easily the...
Sorry.
No, it is. It's the worst.
It's not okay. I really hope that it doesn't come to that, but at that point, I would say change it to the Gila Monster, because that dude's kind of fierce. Chance is a little bit fierce in the face.
Chance the Raptor is the best line I heard. That's a guy that works here at Lotus. Adam Hill from the RJ. He goes, "Couldn't, if we're going to go Gila Monster, something completely unrelated, couldn't it just be Chance the Raptor?"
That's fantastic. We can get a new goal song. It would be great.
By the way, the goal song, I like.
Yeah, you know, I haven't actually heard it. Like, I've heard it outside the context of the game, but I haven't heard it after a goal.
We can't hear it in the press
exactly.
box.
Exactly. So I'm going to the Buffalo game as a, quote, fan.
I may be doing that for Boston here Sunday.
Oh, are you? Nice. Yeah, I'm going to the Buffalo game as a, quote, fan. So I'm really hopeful that I could actually hear the goal song, because I want to hear the energy in the stadium when it happens. Watch, they'll get shut out that game. So that's my luck.
Not the way Buffalo's playing.
No, that's for... I'm going to save my thoughts on that because I love my wife. So
okay. We're
just going to go there. Last thing before we get out of here, obviously we talked about Shipachov. Where in the world is Vadim Shipachov?
Currently in Las Vegas with his wife. I'm guessing he's skating on the other end of the rink when they're doing figure skating practices at the Ice Center. I honestly don't know. He's not allowed to skate with the team. It's against NHL rules, but he is skating on his own. He's not playing in the AHL.
And he's making $9 million.
I am under the impression, I strongly believe the reports that Shipachov is not happy.
I do too.
And I have multiple reasons to believe that are anonymous reasons, so I can't really go on record or report. But I'm telling you right now, this is an ugly situation that needs to be solved. And they've been saying the it's not broke, don't fix it type thing. We're not going to change this lineup until we lose, because if they were 7-0 and they brought Shipachov in and they go on a 4-game losing streak, everyone's going to blame him, and I understand that. They lost, bring Shipachov back.
Sure, if that's the plan.
Yeah.
Yep. So we're going to end it right here.
And I feel like we should close it out with Gerard Gallant's thoughts and just the positives that they can take from this last loss.
Yes, I do too. This is Ryan the Hockey Guy. Find me at Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter. Jesse, where can people find you?
At Jesse Granger _ and at LasVegasSun.com. Read all my stuff. It's amazing.
And as Jesse said, here is Gerard Gallant's thoughts on the positives to take out of the loss to the Detroit Red Wings. Pay very close attention to the question.
I'm Ryan Bear with the Knights of the Roundtable. Coach, is there any positive takeaways from this game in regards to the loss? What positive outlet do you think that the team played tonight?
There's a lot of positive. Like I said, for two periods, I can, you know, we'll go over the clips, we'll go over the tape, and there's a lot of positive, a lot of good hockey going on, and a lot of guys played a real good hockey game. And the sad part is you got to watch that third period and say, you know what, they had probably 10 or 12 scoring chances against us, and they were grade A chances, so you have to clean that up for sure.
Thanks, Coach. Thanks, everybody. Yeah. Thanks, Coach. Thanks, Coach.